Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
Mr. Himes, how are you this morning?
Good morning, Tony. Doing great, thank you.
All right, so glad you are here. A couple of things that we wanted to touch upon. First of all, did you happen to see the Sandy Hook Promise PSA that was released, I guess, yesterday? It's very hard-hitting. Senator Blumenthal said it was a punch to the gut, and that's kind of putting it mildly. I don't know if you've seen it, but it certainly gets the message across.
Yeah, I sure have, and I couldn't agree more with the senator. You sort of can't watch that and not lose your breath a little bit. This is, I'm sure you've described it to your listeners, but, you know, it's a bunch of kids, matter-of-factly, you know, talking about how their skateboard can help them break a window so that they can get out of their school when there's a shooting. And, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's one of the most effective ads I've ever seen. And, of course, you know, a reminder that that it's not crazy for kids to think that way, because now they're doing active shooter drills and school, and of course all of us are worrying about when we send our children off, whether they might be subject to the kind of incident that occurred way too close to home at Sandy Hook.
You know, I've been saying it the last couple of days. I saw it yesterday. I think I ran it in my office over here. I think I ran it 5, 6, maybe 8 times, and I bawled like a baby every time I saw it. It was so hard-hitting. It really, really gets to you. And if it doesn't get to you, you've got ice water in your veins.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And, you know, you sort of hope it's one of those contributions to the public discussion that gets us actually talking about ways to reduce gun violence. You know, it's one of the most frustrating issues I've ever had to deal with, because, there is the NRA in particular, but folks who are opposed to any gun regulation at all look at the other side and say, you guys want to take away my guns? You want to, you know, do away with the Second Amendment, right? That's not true, of course. Most people like me simply want better regulation around people's Second Amendment rights. I'm a supporter of Second Amendment rights, but, you know, as we've demonstrated here in Connecticut, when they passed a bunch of laws after the Sandy Hook atrocity, look, you know, making sure everybody who buys a weapon has a background check, you know, taking high capacity magazines off the market. There's a whole bunch of things you can do that are not going to fix the problem in its entirety, but are going to make a very big problem, 35,000-ish deaths a year from gunfire in the United States, to a much smaller problem, and hopefully reduce the kind of fear that that children have as they go off to school. And of course, which was so incredibly powerfully demonstrated in that PSA.
And I think the biggest thing too, Jim, is the fact that they really touched on the fact that they have to keep making these PSAs every year. The fact that we're still seeing PSAs made by the same group, which, you know, I tip my hats to Sandy Hook Promise, but the fact that they're still making these, and really it doesn't look like a lot has changed since they've had to lose their children, or, you know, in some cases, yeah, their kids or their family members who were teachers. I think the biggest thing that whether or not you, again, like you said, support gun laws or things like that, it just seems like nothing significant has happened. And maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I have to imagine this is on the top of your agenda now, being back in session and talking about gun laws and things like that.
Well, that's exactly right. And of course, the House, in which I serve, passed a universal background check bill. And this is something, Melissa, that is supported by 95% of Americans. I mean, the word common sense is overused, but look, let's face it. The idea that if you're going to go out there and buy a gun, we ought to check you out to make sure you're not on a terrorist watch list, or to make sure that you haven't been convicted of a violent crime. I mean, come on. How can you oppose that? And the answer is that almost no Americans do. But the NRA does. And what's upsetting about that is that, and I'll say it again, you know, I'm a supporter of Second Amendment rights. I'm glad it's in the Constitution. I don't happen to own a firearm, but I enjoy firing them on firing ranges and that sort of thing. And there's a perfectly good solution here, which allows hunters and people who think that a gun makes them safer in their home to keep it. But there's a whole bunch of things we could do, like background checks, like Ethan's Law. That's another story. territory that we have way too much familiarity with because of what happened to the Song family just up in, I guess it was Milford, where their son went to a home where there was an unsecured gun. Kids started playing with it, and he lost his life as a result. You know, things like safe storage. Again, these are not things that compromise your Second Amendment rights. They're and I sort of hate to use an overworked use, but they're commonsensical, and they're one reason why you know we have higher rates of gun death in this country than pretty much anywhere else in the world. There's you know there's a couple of countries like Honduras that have higher gunfire rates, but you know it's because we just don't do an adequate enough job at making sure people can exercise their Second Amendment rights, but do so responsibly.
Right, and quite frankly, if you have nothing to hide, what's the problem with having a background check, especially if it would in fact get offenders off the streets or not having guns in their possession? That's for sure. Congressman Jim Himes, unfortunately, we ran out of time with you today, but we look forward to talking to you as we do every Friday morning. Thank you so much for calling in.
Sounds good. Have a great Friday.
All right, with us here on the line is Brandon Walker. And Brandon, once a reporter here in Connecticut with News 12, now he is in Texas doing some things over there. He's working. Where are you working, Brandon? In television? Is that what you're doing?
Yes, sir. Still working in television. Reporter, sometimes anchor at KPRC-TV. That's the NBC station in Houston.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, you're in the middle of all of this chaos right now with Hurricane Umberto. Can you kind of describe what's going on there right now?
Yeah, sure. So, actually, it was a tropical storm, Imelda. It's hard to keep count, Tony. You know, there's so many of them, it seems, of late. So the storm made landfall in Freeport, Texas, on Wednesday, but it didn't. It made landfall. We thought that we had dodged a bullet, as the cliche goes. And then we were beginning to hear reports yesterday, Wednesday night into Thursday, that parts of the eastern half of southeast Texas, so parts of Beaumont, Winnie, were seeing significant rainfall and creeks were overflowing and flooding, et cetera. So that was the story Wednesday night into all day Thursday until midday Thursday. Heavy rain system appears over Houston, and the infrastructure here being what it is, so many bayous and creeks, so much pavement, so many people on the roads, it didn't take much for you to see what you've seen in the images, the video that's been all over the world now.
Yeah, it's been awful, Brandon, and a good friend of mine, of course, immediately I thought of you, and I was hoping that everything would be okay. I'm glad to hear that you're all right. But yeah, looking at those images immediately, I'm sure, because you've been down there for quite some time now, immediately I just had flashbacks, and I thought, are you kidding me? Is Harvey back? I immediately thought about Hurricane Harvey. It was only 2 years ago, and I think what's awful, Brandon, is the fact that a lot of these families were just feeling like we're settled again after Harvey, and now this happens.
Melissa, you hit the nail on the head. I spent yesterday in Winnie, Texas. It's about 60 miles east of Houston, and we were on a high water rescue boat throughout the day with a fire department out of Mont Bellevue, Texas, and we interviewed this family that flagged us down for them to be rescued from their home, and they were telling us about another relative who moved into their home 1 week ago. It took them 2 years to rebuild from Hurricane Harvey. The water was back. The water was back at levels a little higher than Harvey, they say. And so they've got to start all over again, only getting to enjoy their home for a week.
Yeah, that's insane. I mean, so like you just said, you were on one of these boats because you were doing a story. And it seems like in some of the footage I was watching earlier this morning, just some of the overnight footage that came over to us, it looks like the water was as high as to people's chests. You know, mailboxes were completely underwater, cars completely left to just see where they end up, sort of. What are some of the most alarming things you're seeing down there, or you're hearing about at least?
Right. Well, if you're talking Houston, Houston is a commuter city, people. We drive in Houston. As you know, in southwestern Connecticut, you drive there too, 95. People had to leave their cars in certain instances, low-lying parts of freeways, because the water came down so quickly, so heavily, they were stranded. So you had parts of Interstate 95, for instance, looking like a parking lot of stranded vehicles, people just having to run for their lives. And not to be dramatic here, to get away from that rushing water that came so quickly.
Yeah, and again, we're talking to Brandon Walker, a very good friend of mine. He and I used to be reporters here. We were at News 12 Connecticut a few years back, and now he's in Texas, and he's reporting there for a station there. Brandon, any ideas at this point? We know that the rain is sort of, it's starting to kind of tamper off a little bit, but
yeah.
Now we deal with the aftermath a little bit. Anything from your governor as far as what is in place, what's going to be done? Do we know if any efforts, anybody coming down there to help you guys out?
Yes, certainly. So local officials, the Harris County judge, other counties here in the area have issued disaster declarations, and so they're beginning that process. So we will begin to see the recovery process beginning here. What is so unique about this system is that we expected rain. We just didn't expect it to come so quickly and so ferociously as it did in such little time. And so officials had to kind of jump on the back end of that when usually they're on the front end, because the storm wasn't predicted to be as big of a punch as it turned out to be, particularly for the Houston area.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting that you say that, because it's very immediately I kind of drew the parallel to what we saw happen in the Bahamas, and how that storm, we knew it was going to hit hard, but we didn't know it was just going to kind of sit there and just completely destroy, parts of the island there. So very similar things there. Any kind of efforts? I know, obviously, we're sort of two worlds apart. I mean, Texas and Connecticut, obviously. But is there anything that like our listeners could do? Do we know if there's any way that we can help in any way? I mean, I know it's kind of not something you have to obviously put out there, but I wasn't sure if you've heard from nonprofits or anything where they're looking to help.
Well, you know, I know the obvious. There is the Red Cross, which has set up its disaster relief efforts throughout the area. There are other organizations. You know, there's one organization that we talk about a lot here in Southeast Texas, because they were so helpful to us during Hurricane Harvey, and they're called the Cajun Navy. They're out of Louisiana, and what they do is they hop on their boats, their little fishing boats, their rescue trucks, what have you, and they come into come into Texas whenever there's a flood here to help. And they do so because, I don't know if you remember when there were significant flooding in southwestern Louisiana about maybe 3 years ago or so.
Mm-hmm.
They say so many people came out and helped them, so they returned the favor. They were here during Harvey, and they just asked volunteers to come. You can search for them on Facebook. They're awesome. And there are other organizations like this of just people from the ground up coming together to do their thing. So you've got, you know, your larger organizations like your American Red Cross, but you also have your ground-up organizations of people just getting together and pulling their resources to help others.
Yeah, well, Brandon, my prayers to you and everybody in Texas. Thank you so much for chatting with us, Bud, and I'll talk to you really soon.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
It's 9:30. Do you know what time it is? It's time for the Coffee Break Chat on WICC.
All right, Greg Dancho is here. Of course, he's our good friend from the Beardsley Zoo. Greg, how you doing this morning?
Good morning. Yeah, beautiful day.
Yes.
Gorgeous.
And that's the way it's going to be for the next couple of weeks. That's good for the zoo, right?
Gotta love every minute of it.
That's for sure. We have Greg on today because I know you're very proud of this. You guys got an accreditation for zoos and aquariums and all of that stuff. What does that mean to you
guys?
Well,
yeah, we're part of only 226 accredited zoos and aquariums in the country right now. And so that means we've gone through a very rigorous program and examination from our peers and from organizations to look at our facility and to say that we've basically got the Good Housekeeping seal of approval. And it's tremendously proud of this. We've had accreditation since 1987. So we've continued this accreditation process since 1987. Now, when you look at accreditation, a lot of people think, well, you know, you just send an envelope in and put your dues in, and you pay your money, and you get back into the fold. It doesn't work that way. Every 5 years, we basically lose accreditation, and you have to be accredited again. So it's not a reaccreditation. It's basically you go right back to the table and start again. And what they do is they look at, when we look at our accreditation process, we go through everything from animal care to veterinary care to our grounds to our education programs, to our conservation programs. And so it is a very rigorous and very intensive process. So it's I am so very proud of our staff and the people that work with us and help support our zoo that we were able to attain our accreditation again.
Yeah, we were very excited to see that. And to hear that you have to reapply every year or every five years. I mean, what would it mean if you didn't get the accreditation, I guess?
Well, Melissa, what it does is what being accredited by AZA and the Association of Zoo Aquariums, what it basically does for us is, again, we are a professional institution. And to be part of this organization, we're able to have our staff go to professional meetings. We're able to utilize all the professional programs that they have for us. We work with endangered species. As we've talked before on the show, is that we have some of the most endangered species on the planet here at the zoo. And without the accreditation, we may not be able to work with those animals. These animals may not be able to be available to us if we're not showing that we are doing the best in animal care and programs and all this that to show that we are the best that we can possibly be. So to do this, there's many different, benefits to this, but most of the benefits is that it shows that we are one of the best doing our work.
We're talking to Greg Dancho, who, of course, is with the Beardsley Zoo. Greg, this was, I honestly think it's breaking news overnight, but obviously this was a study that's been looking at, you know, birds for quite some time, it sounds like. Nearly 3 billion birds have disappeared from North America over the last 50 years, which is a 29% drop. And the problem here is it's not just threatened or endangered species. We're also talking about common backyard birds, all things that you know. What are your comments on this? I think this is devastating to hear this.
Well, it goes back to what we've talked again is one of the main pillars of our zoo is conservation and environment, and we try to get people to understand and learn about these things to help in their backyards. And what's happening is many different factors. We're looking at climate change. So when these birds used to travel someplace, they'd expect to see their food, their shelter there. With the way things are changing, they may not be there any longer. And so that you really don't have a very short window with these animals' lives that they have to find food or find shelter. If it's not there, you really don't have much time for them to rebound from this. So this is one of the reasons I think we're seeing a major decline in species. The other thing is habitat loss, urban sprawl, places. That's why we're so vehement about having on our grounds areas that animals can actually find a place to shelter, especially this time of year when they're migrating. One of the coolest things you'll see is if you look on some of the sites where you see at night where they do the radar, and you can see it looks like clouds, but these are just all birds migrating to different locations. And if they can't find a place, again, to shelter and find food, they don't live very long. And so I think this could be a major cause of why we're seeing such a rapid loss of birds.
And what can we do as in the human race? What can we do to help them?
Well, it starts with little things. It starts with putting out there's some arguments about bird feeders because people put bird feeders out. They may not clean them enough. They may not keep the food in there long enough. But if you really do the right thing and check the Audubon Society's website also to look at this, if you help feed them, get water out for them. We've had a couple 3 weeks of pretty dry conditions. And so make sure if you can put water out for them, make sure it stays clean, just like we do with our animals at the zoo. Keep the food clean, keep the water clean, keep it in abundance. Don't forget about it because these birds may get used to finding this food and can't find it again. Plant trees in your yard that are bushes in your yard that are fruit bearing that these birds will like to come in and go. Goldfinches love the thistle plants. Now, not many people like thistle plants, but the birds love it. So having thistle in your yard. We have at the zoo right now. We put cardinal flower. We're right now considered a pollinator pathway. We also work on the zoo grounds to have areas where again these wild birds come through. In the last couple of days, I've seen more hummingbirds than I've ever seen before because we've made the habitat for them here amenable to they can come in, grab the food that they need, and then continue on their migration down south. So again, anything like that can be helpful to give these birds a little leg up on or a feather or a beak up. up on wing up on survivability.
Greg, one last question. Is there anything going on at the zoo that we need to know about? Any new exhibits that are coming?
We are going to be opening up this fall the upper level of our new farmyard. We're really excited about that. We're going to be working. We've had our farmyard closed this year to do renovations. So the lower farmyard will be continued working on that throughout the fall and winter months to have that as a spring opening. But our upper level farmyard should be opening about the middle of October, so keep an eye out for that. We're excited about getting some of the animals that we had in the lower farm up to a brand new home and having programs. We've got a new program space that we're going to be showing off. We have this Saturday is International Panda Day, so come up for this Saturday and take a look at our information on our red pandas. We're excited about having these animals on our zoo and again endangered species and something that people really love to see. So again, our spider monkeys been out. They actually love this weather. It's not been as hot as it's been all summer long. They're very, very active. And again, I think we're really proud of this accreditation. Again, there's only three of us that are accredited in the state of Connecticut. We're the only zoo that's accredited in the state of Connecticut. And I think this shows the level of professionality and care that our staff gives to our zoo.
Absolutely. You guys do a great job over there. Greg, we've run out of time here. Is there a website folks can go to?
Yeah, it's at beardsleyzoo.org. You can go on our website or, again, check out our Facebook page. Again, Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo.
All right. Sounds good. I know we're going to talk to you again, Sue. Good luck on the accreditation and keep the zoo rolling.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
State health officials are issuing another warning regarding the dangers of electronic cigarettes as two more people are hospitalized with lung conditions. I'll tell you, you'd only have to tell me once.
Yeah, how many warnings do we need?
Yeah, exactly. The State Department of Public Health, they say that there have been at least 13 cases of people getting severe lung injuries, three of them in New Haven County, seven in Fairfield County. Now, it's said that there are maybe 530 cases of lung injuries from e-cigarettes or vaping products reported to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So far, there have been 8 vaping-related deaths across the country. I don't know what to say. I mean, it seems to me people are dying, but we don't seem to be getting the message. People are getting sick. We don't seem to be getting the message. At least stop doing this until they get more information about it. I mean, it seems to me, and maybe this is an irresponsible thing to say, maybe this is a stupid thing to say, you might be better off in the long run smoking cigarettes.
Well, we heard yesterday during the show, which I think is good that we'll bring it up later today, hopefully, that Senator Richard Blumenthal said when he sat down with those Yale researchers, he said that they found out one of those vaping pods is the equivalent of an entire pack of cigarettes. So in one sitting, mm-hmm. you're just taking down an entire pack. And you're talking about, I'm not saying that adults should do it either, but you're talking about 13, 14, 15-year-old, even college students, they're still developing. I know that that's crazy to think, but they're still developing. Taking down a pack of cigarettes in one sitting, and you know that they're not vaping just once a day. So think about just that capacity. And on top of all of that, he said there are chemicals in those vaping pods that we don't even know where they're coming from. I mean, when you think about it, we were actually talking about this last night, that when we had the fentanyl, we still have an issue with fentanyl, but when that first became a big issue on the streets, people getting fentanyl, it was because you didn't know what was being cut into those drugs. It's the same thing we're talking about here. You know, you start off with this concept of we have a vaping, we have vaping and we have vaping products, but then you have all these side either businesses or non-legitimate companies who are creating things, but they don't know what they're putting in there. They're just trying to make money, basically, make money off of you. And now we're putting that into our bodies, and we don't even know what we're smoking. Just because the label says, hey, this is, a non-tobacco product or whatever they say, it doesn't actually tell you in there what you are putting into your body.
And some of these products, if I was reading this correctly, I don't have the article in front of me, but they're packaging this, in some cases, in basements across the country.
Correct.
And they're cutting it with other things, other products. And I guess when you mix these things together, this is what you get. You had a story a couple of days ago, maybe a week ago, about a kid who was 17 or 18 years old, and he had the lungs of a 75-year-old.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because that's just it. Unfortunately, that's the other thing too, is you think because you're young and vibrant and everything, first of all, you don't know how quickly these are going to affect you.
Nope.
Second of all, you don't even know how your body is going to react to them. Mm-hmm. Think about it. When you go to the doctor, Tony, how many times do they ask you, even though you've been to the same doctor, do you have any allergies? Are you allergic to any medications? Yada, yada, yada.
Every time.
Exactly.
Every time.
So when they're handing you these pods, no one's asking you if you're allergic to God knows what chemicals are in there. I mean, it's just, you're just asking. Again, all I keep thinking about is fentanyl, because it is the same concept as when we figured out that fentanyl was cut with different drugs and it wasn't just straight heroin. Not that heroin's not a problem. It is an issue. But once it became fentanyl, it was an even bigger problem. And I think we're seeing the same exact thing with vaping. And I was glad to hear that New York banned it. But what are we doing? Why haven't we banned it yet? I don't know. In my opinion, it's a no-brainer. I think it needs to be gone. I think we need to ban all products. The FDA hasn't even approved them yet. Why are we even, you know what I mean? Why are we even discussing it? It shouldn't even be an option.
So is that the question of the day?
It has to be.
Okay.
I think at this point, we've talked about vaping for months now, and we've seen all of these different cases across the country. Like you said, that we've had 8 deaths already, just nationwide. Now we're seeing 13 cases here where people have been hospitalized with lung problems. This is nothing, you know, small to sit on. So what do you think? Should it be banned or not? I mean, it's a no-brainer for me as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. What do you think? Should it be banned? Should vaping be banned altogether? Now, the Connecticut Public Health Department, they're warning you about the severe lung injury. The commissioner advises consumers to avoid buying these vaping products off the street or from another person, mm-hmm. including a friend.
Yeah.
There you go. That says it right there in just those two lines. What do you think, though? Should it be banned? Should vaping be banned? Or at least until they get some more information, at least until this is under control? I find it to be a dirty, filthy, disgusting habit.
Right.
If you ask me.
Well, and that's the thing, is it's such a confusing market, because there are things that are reputable with vaping. You talk about sometimes your friend who used vaping years ago to try and get off of e-cigarettes to try and get off of a nicotine addiction. It started off that way, very reputable. But again, Tony, with anything in life, people are going to jump on the bandwagon. I want to make money. It's the same thing, unfortunately, with the marijuana industry.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean you're getting, I hate to say it, good pot, because a lot of time people are putting crap in it and you don't even know what you're smoking. So I don't know. I think, unfortunately, the drug industry, I don't really touch it with a 10-foot pole, but I know just from researching it enough with news that if you don't know where it's coming from and you don't know the resource, don't you dare put it in your body.
All right, go to our Facebook page and answer the question. Should vaping be banned? This is getting out of hand. I mean, these kids, they're just people in general. They're vaping and they don't know what they're inhaling, and it's taking its toll. Some people are dying. Some people are getting very, very sick.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems to keep on going. So that raises the question, should vaping be banned, at least until they get this all under control?
And that's the thing, Tony, is I do think that it's such a gray area question, because, I mean, to me, I'd rather be safe than sorry. I mean, obviously, I feel that there are issues just with the cigarette company, so that's just a whole other beast. But when you talk about vaping, unfortunately, I kind of draw the parallel to fentanyl. When you talk about, I'm not saying that I would ever condone anyone using heroin, obviously, but when heroin sales, when they started to realize that you could lace them with fentanyl, they realized that they could make more profit off of basically awful, you know, versions of heroin, and people were dying from this. And it reminds me of the same kind of thing. I feel like the vaping companies initially brought out this to help people kick the nicotine addiction, and that was fine. But then it became where more, I'd say, not qualified and certainly not FDA approved either companies or individuals or groups are creating different vaping pods. And we have research that is shared from Yale where they said specifically there are vaping pods out there where there are chemicals in there that we can't even identify. We don't even know exactly what we would call them, or if you were to say the name out loud, we've never even heard of them before, which is certainly concerning because you don't know how your body is going to react. But also they said some of these vaping pods that you're getting from places that are not not what you'd call standard or good standards, should I say, a lot of those vaping pods could be the equivalent of one full pack of cigarettes in just one sitting. So it's enough of a concern where until there's more FDA approval in some of these products on the marketplace, you ban them. But, you know, not everyone agrees.
All right. Now, that was our question of the day. Should vaping be banned? And some of you agree, some of you disagree. Gina says, yes. Sadly, there are too many high school students using them during school, even during class. You mean to tell me there are kids that are vaping in the classroom?
I'm sure that they're sitting in the back row and they do a quick puff or something. I know there are people. I have a friend who is a teacher in one of the local school districts. She says kids are in the bathroom all the time doing that. So it wouldn't surprise me if they do in the back row or something, or they lean down into their backpack or something. Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me, but it's scary stuff. Roberta said, yes, it should be banned in all states. As we saw, it was banned in New York. So yeah, here in Connecticut, and Roberta said, all across the nation.
All right. Carl says, I don't like the idea of government forcing us to live a certain way. Although I don't smoke, I feel it's another example of socialism. Well, I guess that's one way of looking at it, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. And Jay said, no, not until they can prove the deaths are from vaping. So Jay brings up a good point. At this point, these are all, they're basically finding common denominators in these deaths. Every single death, all 200 plus deaths across the nation, including the 13 here, or not deaths, excuse me, illnesses, hospitalizations, every single one, the common denominator is everyone has admitted to using vapes, and that these vaping pods have been connected. Now, they have not confirmed that they are the reason, but they have all been the common denominator, which is why they're pushing for it. Jay continued by saying they cannot prove it is from the black market cartridges, the black market THC. The numbers are too small to cause this much hype. Proper studies need to be done. And I think they're being done, Jay. I do think we have a lot of numbers already. I think the fact that we've already had 8 deaths and we already have 200 plus people in the hospital, I think maybe it's not thousands, but I think one is enough, you know?
I think so. And you know, Jay makes a good point, but on the other hand, you're going to tell me there's no correlation between this these people.
How do you have 250 plus cases all the same?
That's where I disagree. I don't think that it's a small number. I think that's enough to step back and say, whoa, something's wrong here. Something's off.
Right. Let's reevaluate this. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Where'd we leave off?
Edward.
Edward. Okay. And no, if people want to be the guinea pigs, they have the right. We don't ban old-fashioned cigs. Mm-hmm. I think that they should, Ed. I really do. I think that they should make the fine for selling to minors 10 times the current level. Well,
yeah.
that's okay, but still, they've got to get caught selling the vaping products to minors before you can heavily fine them. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's always going to be people there. They're going to say, screw it. I'm going to see if I can push it through.
Right, right. You know? And I think Ed's comment actually sort of, I think, springboarded a lot of this, which I think is great. We had a couple more comments. Sarah said, I mean, if you're going to ban e-cigarettes, then you'd have to also ban regular cigarettes. I'm just shocked that everyone is so surprised. Something that was created to be like a cigarette is now killing people. I think she hits the nail on the head. I'm surprised that this point, especially with, we do have concrete information showing that cigarettes do kill people. They absolutely cause cancer. There are so many different reasons, and we have PSAs and everything. The fact that cigarettes haven't been banned is beyond. So I think Sarah makes a great point. You know what? If we're going to ban e-cigarettes, why not cigarettes as well?
Well, I think they should ban cigarettes, but cigarettes kill you over time.
Absolutely.
This seems to be, I mean, unless I'm missing it.
This is quicker.
It seems to me you're taking a few puffs or over a couple of days' time and you're getting sick.
Because we don't know what's in the pods.
Well,
that's the problem.
And Gil says, I'm not saying that these vape things aren't bad. I'm sure they are, but aren't cigarettes worse and more addictive? I don't vape and I never smoke, so maybe I am missing something here. But I would think if you're going to ban one, you should probably ban both. Gil, I totally agree with you.
I think so, too.
I really, really do. I mean, what they did with cigarettes was just tax it so heavily that now if you want to buy a carton of cigarettes, I mean, you're going for over $100.
Yeah, that's crazy.
On a carton. Well, what's a pack? A pack has got to be $10, $11
at this point. I never have smoked in my life. I've never bought a pack of cigarettes or anything, so I have no I have no correlation. Like, I have no idea what it would cost. But no, I think no matter what, whether it's building our economy, whatever the case was for why they made cigarettes and why they've been around this long, I think we're coming to a point where what is the point point of doing all these health studies if we're just going to ignore them? Why do we do all this cancer research connected to smoking cigarettes if we're just going to keep selling them? I don't get it.
You got that right.